Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Leo Laporte, episode 61 for March 21st, 2009. Arduino. Floss Weekly is brought to you by the 2009 Google Summer of Code Project. Full and part-time college students get paid for writing open-source code this summer, review a list of projects, and submit an application from March 23rd to April 3rd. For more information, go to code.google.com/SOC and enter Floss Weekly on your application. It's time for Floss Weekly, the program that covers free, libre, open-source software, and today, hardware. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show, Randall Schwartz, Perl programmer extraordinaire, master squeaker, and the man who built Stonehenge.com.
Indeed, with one hand, for a little while anyway.
One arm tied behind his back. Hey, by the time this airs, you're going to have had your surgery.
Yeah, in
good
fact,
luck
I will
that.
Be as this show is coming out on the Saturday of that, I would have had my surgery like 2 days before that. Of course, we're taping ahead of time, so I can't really tell you how that went yet. But I'm sure it went well, and they're taking the plate back out of my arm, the one they put in 3 months ago, because one of the pins is impinging on the wrist bones, and that's why it's been three months and I'm still not recovered yet. So sucks, but hopefully this will have all straightened everything out, and I will, you know, in one of the future shows, I'll put in given one last arm report. Probably to let you guys all know how that turned out. So
excellent.
And another thing that just happened as you're listening, this is actually as we're taping this, I just got back from the most recent Insight.
How
shoots.
Did that go?
It was incredible. It was absolutely wonderful. The program was titled Evolution Emanation. It was timed to coincide roughly with Darwin's 250th birthday and the 200th anniversary release of On the Origin of Species. Not On the Origin of the Species, like most people say, On the Origin of Species, because it was all the technology about how species actually got created. I've got a bunch of great recordings from that cruise. They'll be going in my Insight Cruise feed, which is at podcast.insightcruises.com. And it's a great program, wonderful speakers. Made me want to drop everything I'm doing and go work on bioinformatics now. But you know me, it's like every time I do something really cool, I'm going to hang out with the people that keep doing it. It's just been great. Great speakers, good run. Enjoyed going back into the Panama Canal again. That was a lot of fun. Of course, I'm a dot geek, so all my pictures will be on flickr.com/Randall-Schwartz. Again, by the time you hear this, it's not quite there yet as we're taping this, but it'll be there when you hear this. And just had a great time. I love being in the sun, love being in the warmth. Got a little bit of a tan for every place except where my arm braces, so I'm looking forward to getting rid of that too. That'll be really nice. It was great. It was really wonderful. I'm looking forward to the cruise you and I are doing coming up.
China. I still haven't bought my plane tickets. I better get going on that. I think we have till the end of the month to get that.
Yeah, I'm getting close to that too, so I have to hurry up and get that then. I know, but
And then I got to get I got to pay for the land thing, and I'm excited. But more importantly, I got to prepare my speeches, my talks.
I don't know.
I can't remember what I committed to, but it was pretty exciting. I think I was going to do a home theater, Mac Mini,
right?
I think. That's one. We got one set up here, so that's good. You know, we just got the new Mac Pro today. I did an unboxing right before the show.
I was watching that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I don't think I'll bring that on the trip, though.
No, that would be a little
right
heavy
here.
To carry.
Stay but, right know, here.
One of the guys on our cruise, though, is a scientist that wanted to give us each a chance to carry our own DNA in a separate little vial around with us.
So, what would that involve? Does he have to remove it?
Involves us swooshing a solution in our mouth.
Oh, that's not bad.
And then putting that into a tube, letting that rest for a few minutes, adding a couple more solutions to it. And what came out was this white, milky stuff, which was actually the core DNA stripped of the outer walls of the cell and everything. It was really incredible. And we put it in these little vials. And what's really great is he said, you can wear it around your neck. Like even tonight, it's formal night. You can wear those little vials around your neck. It'll be really cool. And I said, no, you can't do that because it's formal night. They won't let you wear jeans.
Very good. You're quick.
And yes, it was totally spontaneous. Wasn't planned.
You're
I just sort of worded it out.
That's
and it
the joke
the
of the cruise. That's very, very good. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you are as witty and funny as usual on our China cruise. That's exciting. And we really shouldn't be talking about it because it's all sold out now, so
okay.
Too late. Sorry, But, you know, this is Mac Mania 9. There'll be a Mac Mania 10.
Pretty sure. I mean, these shows have been really good for Neil and the crew and for Mac enthusiasts all around the world.
So, yeah, love doing absolutely. It. Find out more at insightcruises.com. Now, today on the show, we have a very nice Italian boy is going to join us.
Mr. Massimo Banzi.
Banzi. Yep. Massimo Banzi is the creator among, he's got a team, of the Arduino, which is a very interesting microprocessor and board that allows you to do all sorts of interesting projects. If you've read Make Magazine, it's in there every month.
Yeah, it's a little different project, a little different kind of show for me, because mostly I'm all about the software, but I knew that this hardware would be really exciting to talk about in terms of open hardware, able to get things leveraged and stuff. Yeah,
and it's all the software is open source. So we're going
to the hardware is open source. This is also a first for our show. I don't think we've had open source hardware on before. So
I'm really intrigued by this. I've heard a lot about Arduino. I can't wait to find out more. Massimo will join us in a second, but before we do, we've got a sponsor. I think this is a first.
Oh, no, we had one before, but this is a great new sponsor.
We had a sponsor on this show?
Visa, remember, about 6 months
ago. Oh, yeah. Well, you just don't think of them as open source. These guys you think of as open source. I'm talking about Google. And the Google Summer of Code is coming up.
Yeah.
Full and part-time college students get paid for writing open source code over the summer. I praise Google so highly for doing this. It is really, really great. You can actually review a list of projects that have already been submitted and submit your own application if you're a college student, full or part-time. Starts March 23rd, and just a few days, and goes through April 3rd. So start thinking, and for more information, go to code.google.com/SOC. That's for Summer of Code. This is a global program that offers student developers an amazing opportunity to get paid. You're not just going there as a volunteer. You get paid to write code for various open source projects. We meet people all the time who said, oh, yeah, I did that at Summer of Code. They've been doing it. Now, this will be its fifth year. Nearly 2,500 students have participated, millions of lines of code. Now, if you want to actually starts, I should explain kind of the structure of it. The way it starts is organizations submit open source project ideas. They apply to be a mentor organization for the program. So all of those ideas have now been submitted. Google has posted them online. About 150 of these will be accepted. So you can read previous years by going to code.google.com/SOC and then the year, 2005, 6, 7, or 8. But if you want to read the current year's mentor organization applications, go to socghop.appspot.com. Okay, now students, you should probably, it's a good idea if you're thinking of applying to read at least what the ideas for the program will be, you know, the submitted projects. You, as a student, will review this, email the mentor organizations. You might want to ask them questions, get a conversation going, and then you can apply to participate. Google will be choosing about 1,000 students to participate in the program and work with your chosen mentor organization. So I guess the process would be to start by going online to socghop.appspot.com, reviewing the current open source projects, put your application together. You need to submit it March 23rd to April 3rd to code.google.com/SOC. By the way, do us a favor, mention on your application that you heard it on Floss Weekly so they know where you heard about it. Enter Floss Weekly on your application, and good luck to you. I think participating in the Summer of Code is an amazing, amazing, exciting thing.
Well, we've heard about so many of the projects in the last few weeks, actually, have mentioned that they've had Summer of Code projects, and I've participated directly with people on Squeak and Postgres and Perl, all have Summer of Code projects every year, so this is great.
You know, for next week, maybe you could look at some of these and just talk about some of the mentor organizations and their ideas. It'd be kind of fun.
Indeed, I will.
Yeah, yeah. So, cool. So they're going to be, there when it asks how you heard about it, you could say Floss Weekly. They're going to be keeping track of that. And we do thank Google because they wanted to support open source, and they do it with Summer of Code, but they also wanted to support the program in supporting open source. So they're going to be with us for a few weeks. We thank them so much for helping us out.
Thank you, Google.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's bring them on.
So from Milan, Italy, I'm so happy to have him on, Massimo Banzi. He's the CTO of Tinker.it and co-founder of the Arduino Project. Massimo, welcome to Floss Weekly.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
What is Tinker.it?
Well, it's a consultancy company which is based in London and in Milan, but just because I live in Milan, there's an office, but it's the main thing is in London. And essentially, we work with we basically work with technology and design. So we work on interactive installations, we work on new concept for products and that kind of stuff. And we use Arduino heavily in our work. And so, and we do design most of the Arduino boards. But the Arduino team is then made of five people, and each one has got their own, you know, a different activity. And so Tinker is one of the kind of five members of this Arduino team.
Randall talked a little bit about what Arduino is, but maybe we better get it straight from you. It's hardware, but it's also software, right?
Yeah, it's a combination of a small board that has a very tiny processor on it. It's a microcontroller that you can program through an IDE that implements a programming language, which is kind of loosely based on. It looks like Java, but it's actually C, kind of hidden away. And both the design of the boards and the software is all open source. Actually, I think Arduino is an interesting example of what you can do with open source, because it's actually a big mashup of a lot of very exciting bits of open source that were quite hard to use by themselves. And we just put them together in a system that makes it, I would say, fairly easy for somebody to get started on, you know, hacking hardware without needing to become an electrical engineer. Just, you know, you can start by kind of trying and experimenting without too much studying at the beginning.
We had the processing guys on a few weeks back, so you can reference processing in what you said. It's
okay. Yes,
this is based on that. Then, in other words,
yes, it is based on processing. Essentially, we use the same IDE, the same development environment, but processing. When you press the button, it generates a piece of Java code, and in Arduino, essentially, we generate a bit of C code that get compiled by GCC. It's a specific version of GCC that runs on this little processor called AVR. And that's what makes the magic. But processing, it's quite important because I use that also. I'm a teacher. I teach in a number of universities in Europe to designers specifically. So these are people that don't have any technology kind of background. They don't even know how to program. So we use processing to teach them how to program, and then we move them on to Arduino for the hardware. And so the idea that you can actually move from, we can use the same language more or less to program something that's visual on the screen and something that runs on a piece of hardware, I think it's very important.
Do you use the same libraries or similar libraries that can sort of simulate what's happening on the hardware then?
Well, actually, Arduino doesn't have any graphical UI, so obviously the basic language is the same as processing, but obviously they do very different things. But, you know, to give you a silly example, processing has a little library that lets you speak to a serial port. The commands are exactly the same in Arduino. So if you learn how to do that in processing, when you go to Arduino, then you find the same objects, the same methods. So, you know, as much as it's possible, we try to kind of be compatible with processing.
That's very cool, because that means. But how about even things like the input output pins and the LED that's on the board? I know there's like basic hardware like that. Are you simulating that on the processing side?
No, that's not possible yet. But essentially, what is important for us is that when somebody learns with processing, they can learn how to program there, because obviously it runs on a PC or a Mac or a Linux, and it's graphical. And then they can migrate, and they find the same IDE. The language is more or less the same. Obviously, the instructions that you need to turn on and on the different pins are specific to Arduino and a few other boards that are compatible.
Wow. Seems like this would kind of lend itself so well to object-oriented programming. I know a lot of robotics was done in Forth in the early days, but you're using C in a procedural fashion, or is it more objective?
Actually, we use C++. Okay. So, for example, the libraries that people can write for Arduino are essentially C++ classes.
I see. Okay.
So you instantiate one at the beginning of your code, and it's quite nice, because this idea that you can have libraries that we basically borrowed from processing, then actually let a lot of users develop their own library and share them. And I think that this is working very nicely at the moment. We got, I would say, more libraries developed by users originally than the one that we made ourselves originally.
Cool.
And so, this object orientation...
No, go ahead.
Yeah, this object orientation, I would say it also helps a little bit the beginners. Because if you want to talk to a maybe complex piece of hardware, like there are these, for example, there's this chip that lets you drive a bunch of LEDs and dim them and control them individually, which is quite hard to program for a beginner. It was quite hard for me when I read the documentation the first time. Somebody made a nice library that you instantiate at the beginning, and then you just say to this library, okay, set the first LED to this level of brightness, and all the complexity is hidden away inside this object.
Yeah.
So this approach lets you basically wrap complex tasks into something that a beginner can just import, use, and get started very quickly. And also for us, it's important that once you learn, you start to drill down, then you go into the C++, into the C, and you can actually go down as many levels as you like once you learn.
I think that's why fourth made sense, because you would build actions, and then at that point it'd be at a much higher level. You know, it almost makes sense that you're almost speaking, in human language as you
building up a vocabulary of things that are appropriate
precisely
to the hardware and machines
there.
Massimo, how much of the inheritance and stuff are you using? I mean, from what I've seen, most of the stuff in processing is pretty flat. Like, there's not really much of a hierarchy of classes. Are you teaching that much? Or are you just sort of ignoring that and using it like a fancy data abstraction layer?
Well, actually, I try to teach using to stay as simple as possible. So, for example, for me, I would say that the people I teach to are people who are interested in the end result, in what they built with Arduino.
Right.
So for them, the way you program is not that important. So I'm having, obviously, that kind of conversation with the people who are developers who, you know, have debates on, but this should be made in another language, this should be made in another way. Well, the people I work with, normally, they just want something that it's easy to approach, that they can use to make something, and so I try to tell them, just make it simple, just go simple. So we only have one level, really, of we might have a library that encapsulates another library, but it's nothing too complicated. Also consider that the Arduino, the basic model, has like 1 kilobyte of RAM and 16 kilobytes of flash, so you can't really do too many, you know, fancy things with that hardware.
That was another advantage of fourth. It was very compact.
Yeah,
you could squeeze it down into just a few bytes.
So what kind of things are people building with Arduino?
Yes. Okay. I would say that there's an interesting. Arduino started off as a tool for designers and artists to use as a prototyping tool. So a lot of the first things that were done were mostly, you know, artistic installations and maybe artsy stuff, or mostly a prototype of design objects, like, you know, radios and alarm clocks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then it started to spread out, also through the help of, you know, magazines like Make magazine that helped out a lot. And then a lot of makers started to build all sorts of things. We have a lot of people who build their own musical instruments, so they use Arduino as an input to build their input devices and sensors, and then use some software on a computer to actually generate the sounds. Somebody made an amazing clone of this laser harp that Jean-Michel Jarre used to have in the 80s. And he made that using a laser pointer, an Arduino, and then a lot of kind of different bits of software put together. But you can actually see a video online, which is quite amazing. But then there's also people who make practical things like this. One of my favorite is this guy in the U.S. who had an Italian coffee machine, but he wasn't happy with the result. So he ripped out the electrical part and put an Arduino in there. And then he put this...
Now this is a good project.
Yeah. It is a great project. It is a great project. He put this PID algorithm. So he's got the coffee machine that's got the most perfect temperature control ever. And then he uses the nunchuck from the Wiimote in order to control the coffee machine,
oh
which I thought
brilliant. Brilliant.
Yes.
This is what's so cool about Arduino. I mean, that is just cool.
Yeah, the same guy actually made this little boat that has electrical engines, and then again you control it with the nunchuck from the Wiimote.
Yeah.
And actually, he made this little boat, which is actually quite good because it's very lightweight. It runs on a car battery. It's very simple, and actually, it's a very nice little object that you know he made with Arduino, and it's got a nice video online. It's quite nice. There's actually a lot of stuff that people are building now with Arduino. Every day on, you know, Make Magazine, you find one or two projects, and you know it's quite a lot of interesting stuff. I'm always in trouble when somebody asks me what's the coolest thing because I don't know so much stuff now that people have done.
Massimo, do you have some stuff that you've done with Arduino around you? Is there anything in there, Bill?
Unfortunately, at the moment, I am at home. And your wife
won't let you have any of these projects at home, probably.
No, my girlfriend doesn't want this stuff.
Yeah, no, my wife, that's why so I'm here. She said, out of the house, all the gear, everything out of the house. Make really put this on the map, right? I mean, Arduino was around before Make Magazine, though, I would guess.
Yes. I would say we started working on Arduino at the beginning of 2005.
Okay.
And but then at some point in 2006, you know, Make started writing about Arduino. And then, obviously, I'm very lucky that, for example, I would like to take a second later to mention all the five people in the Arduino team, because each one of them is bringing an element that makes the project what it is. You know, without the five of us, it wouldn't be possible. It works because it's the five of us. So one of us is Tom Igo, who is a professor at NYU, and he started to use it at school, and suddenly 120 students, they said, we want this. And then, you know, they started to make these amazing projects, and they have this very good show twice a year at NYU, and the project that they make started to catch the attention of a number of people. So that also, I would say, helped a lot spread Arduino around, the good projects that the students do in that school.
When we would talk to people who do robotics projects and hacking projects pre-Arduino, a lot of them used a processor called Stamp. Is Arduino a replacement for Stamp? Is it different in its functionality? How does it relate to Stamp?
Well, when I started teaching, I teach this subject called physical computing, which is essentially a fancy name for teaching designers and artists how to use electronics and software to build interactive objects or systems. Essentially, we started off with the basic stamp, because I have to credit the basic stamp for being one of the first platform that was easy enough to use for people that didn't have like a hardcore degree in electronics.
Right.
But then when I started teaching, I realized that the basic stamp had been around for quite a bit. And in Italy, it was very expensive. It was 76 euros. That would be something like $90.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it was a lot of the students spend $90 on a chip. They don't make many prototypes. Right. And my way of teaching is like make many prototypes. So I wanted something that would be simple. And so we made a number of, you know, there was another project I made before Arduino. There was an attempt, but it didn't work very well. Then a student made a thesis with me, a project called Wiring. And then we took a lot of the work that we've done in wiring into Arduino. So it was a work done to essentially find a replacement for the stamp that would work well on a Mac. So we needed USB on board, and the basic stamp normally comes with just a serial port. And when you have a design students, they all have Macs. I have a Mac. And so, you know, you need... USB, and also you need the board to look quite nice, so you can't have like a rectangular piece of green fiberglass. It's gotta have a beautiful look, and so we picked, you know, the design in a specific way. We made it blue, you know. So it was born essentially as a way to make something that would be like a basic, more powerful than a basic stamp, cheaper, that you could build yourself. So that's why we all, one of the reasons why we made it open source, both the hardware and the software, is that we want the people to be able to make it themselves. Actually, the picture that you're looking at now that I see on the screen is the very first model of Arduino board, and it was designed for students to make it themselves, because effectively we liked the idea that you would the student would be solder the boards by themselves, because whenever they build something, they have a much better sense of ownership, and they cherish it more than something that the school drops on their lap, you know.
So do you still sell Arduinos as kits so they can put it all together themselves, solder it themselves?
Well, it is possible to buy just the PCB, but the recent version of Arduino are actually surface mount, USB boards, so it's kind of hard to assemble it yourself, so we don't do it anymore. But, you know, in a way, it was designed for us, you know, that it would be cheap. So we kept this rule that the Arduino costs roughly around 20, 22 euros. And this was because I decided that I wanted something that would be exactly the same cost as going out for pizza in Italy. Because
great.
That's my business decision of
brilliant.
That's perfect. Because, you know, the student can have this trade-off. I can actually skip a pizza and buy an Arduino.
Right.
And then it's something that you can measure in a very simple way. So so that's why it is the size that it is and the price that it is, because we wanted to kind of squeeze it in that price and make it easy for people to build.
Well, you've got it even smaller now. I mean, the surface mount means you can really get into something that's not much bigger than a dip for a processor.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, this chip that you're looking at, it's the Arduino Mini, and essentially this was born as a way to replace the stamp. So this fits into any circuit that you made with the stamp. You can put that one.
And it's it's compatible. You're the software compatible too?
Well,
the
layout of the pins is compatible.
Good.
So if you made a circuit with the stamp, you can replace it. Obviously, you have to rewrite the software, because the basic stamp is programmed in BASIC.
Right.
And and C++ is slightly different. But we hide the complexity of C++. You don't really see that until you're trying to do something, you know, funny with strings, which is something that C is not exactly funny to deal with.
So do you teach adults this, or are you teaching this to kids? Who are your students?
Normally, my students are master students. So I teach in a couple of schools in Milan. You know, the design scene in Milan is pretty big. So we got a number of design schools, and I'm basically teaching there, but also teaching in London in different schools. So normally it's adults who basically study at a master's level in design or arts.
How do artists, how do designers take to something that is, you know, such... Really, it's robotics, it's computers, it's computer science.
Well, actually, I would say that from what I could see in the last few years, actually, designers and artists are becoming very excited about the possibility of using hardware in what they do. I think it's becoming very interesting. Again, you have to imagine that the people that do this, they have a slightly different motivation than the regular geek. They don't really look at the technology as something like, oh, this thing is running C++. Oh, my God, I'm so excited. You know, what they do, they say, oh, this, I saw that somebody who has the same level as me has been able to build an interactive installation that looks and sounds very cool with this piece of hardware. This means I could do the same. So a lot of the Arduino popularity revolves around the fact that people see other people do stuff, and they want to build the same kind of projects. So the technology here is just a vehicle.
Right.
It's not something that is interesting per se. This is because there's a number of people that, you know, the standard criticism that I get on a number of forums, like, ah, but this Arduino is a stupid piece of hardware. There is much better stuff. What's so exciting about it? Well, what's different is that I designed it, we designed it for the students. So right. Very intelligent people that are not geeks who want to build things. So we needed to take the technology and make it more, you know, closer to them.
That's what we found, Randall, when we talked to the people at Processing, wasn't it? I mean, these were artists, but they were very interested in the intersection between technology and the arts.
Like one of the things I saw as I was looking, and you might speak more about this, Masami, but I saw an art installation where the Arduino board goes out to the internet and finds out the current stock market prices and raises and lowers three suits hanging on hangers on the wall.
I love it.
I never saw that. That's great.
That's
actually
really great. Yeah,
it's on your blog of your site.
Okay,
that's very cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, that's the one of the interesting things is that, you know, people are using to build these kind of things. That I use it to make installations. I work with a number of companies on making interactive installations for events, exhibitions. I'm working for a museum now, for a museum in Arizona. And so we use Arduino to build this kind of stuff. And it's quite, it's quite interesting because we're trying to build the platform for this museum using as much open source hardware and software as possible. And basically providing tools so that the people inside the museum can prototype the exhibitions before they actually have the visitor touch them.
But one of the things obvious about this is that it's really nice because there are a lot of these applications that just require a little bit of processing power, a little bit of computing power. And I see so many of these people bringing in entire laptops or desktop units and stuff to try to get those to happen. Just really crazy. So I'm glad that there's this little box that's cheap that people can use for this kind of stuff.
I want to mention, we've mentioned Make, but the Geek Dads also do quite a few Arduino projects. I do some really cool ones, too, at Wired Magazine. There's a lot of people using Arduino. It makes me want to do something with Arduino, I tell you.
Once again, yes. something we're doing on this show makes Leo want to go buy another gadget.
we're looking at a video of a sandwich-making machine designed with an Arduino. I think and the command is sudo make me a sandwich. So I don't know what that is. I don't understand. <That's> just, I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It just drops two slices of bread and a slice of cheese, puts it in an oven, and then pulls it out. So
you must be constantly amazed by the things you see that people are doing.
Oh yeah,
guy. That's so cool.
Yeah, I've got this Google alert on Arduino that I get every morning, and every morning I read, and I'm just, oh my God, I don't believe this. And every day there's something crazy that people have done. I'm happy because the people who are making these things, sometimes they're not geeks. I mean, they're not hardcore programmers. You know, for me, it's very exciting when I see somebody that just barely knows how to program that makes something. Yeah. And that's very exciting. Or, you know, people that just copy other people's circuit and they don't know why it works. That's amazing for me. That's what I want, you know.
I'm gonna challenge that, though. You said they're not geeks. They may not be programmers, but they're geeks. Come on.
By definition, they are geeks.
Well, it's a different kind of geek. Let's say they're not software or hardware geeks. That's the difference, yeah.
One of the other things I saw on one of the pages was the Arduway, the Segway made with an Arduino machine.
Oh, how funny. Cool. Oh, my gosh.
And it was balancing itself just fine. And it looked like only just the Arduino and a couple of stepper motors, and it was done.
Well, these are things people used to do with Lego Mindstorms, or they would do with the basic stamp and so forth. But I guess Arduino makes it a lot easier to do this stuff. What's the youngest kids that are using these? I mean, do you see kids in grade school and 8, 9, 10, 11 years old doing stuff with this?
Well, I saw some people at the University of Bremen in Germany. They were running a class called EduWare where they were using Arduino to teach kids how to do wearable computing. So they developed a way to program Arduino visually. So by just essentially you got these colored blocks on the screen and you kind of put them in a sequence, it just creates it creates a program. So those are quite young, 8 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm trying to figure out is is, you know, how we can use more Arduino in education. Because, you know, for example, as much as I love the Lego Mindstorm, but they usually, at least in Europe, they're quite expensive.
Yeah.
So that you normally can't just give one to each kid in the class. But actually, a few years ago, my friend David Quartier, yes, who is one of the people who is part of the Arduino team, who is a Spanish professor who lives in Sweden, he actually ran a project with the city of Madrid where they had teachers teach kids how to make robots with Arduino and leftover parts. And this was great because
That's
these
perfect.
People, they had this, yeah, the kit was like, what, 30 euros? So they could buy one for every kid. And they made these robots. It was crazy. You know, they were using cork for the wheels. The front wheel was made with one of those, you know, one of those deodorants for armpits that had this little sphere on it.
Yeah. To raise them up. Yeah.
I don't know exactly what's the perfect English name for that, but it's the roll-on ball something.
And
this
I don't think we have a name for it either, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Okay, so that was used as a front wheel, and
it was
then
made for pit stops, though.
Yeah,
as the back wheels, and then we're using some old bit of wood as the base, and that's it. And they made a robot, and that for me was mind blowing. And we ran a program where we ran a little David ran a little class for the professor so that he could teach that. And I would like to see more of that, because you know the kids, they learn that they can take this home, they can play with it. You know, if you break a 20 euro board, you don't feel bad. If you break $300 kit, yeah, you're like, oh my God, you know, your parents are mad. And also the Arduino is very robust. I never saw anybody seriously break an Arduino. And the main processor is removable. So if you break it, you just pop it out, you put another one in, and you're good to go. So for me, the ability to fix things is also very important, because we're kind of losing that, you know.
I think also that for kids who are learning programming, the ability to see it, you know, in actually do something really is inspiring. That really makes you want to do more. You know, it's mm-hmm. much more than, you know, when 10 go to 20, you know, print hello, go to 10. Yeah, put some stuff on the screen. But when you get an Arduino playing the drums, you get excited about that. You know, that makes you feel like, wow, I did something. And I would imagine turns kids on to technology in general, and adults and artists and everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what was important is the fact to be able to work on a platform that would make everyday people think, I could build one of those.
Yeah.
Because, you know, otherwise, all these students I have, sometimes they're really thinking, I'm not going to be able to build that. It requires electronics and programming.
Right.
And then we run these two-day workshops. And in these two-day workshops, people get started and they get going and they make stuff in 2 days. And this, for me, it's always amazing when at the end of the second day, you get these people that say, I can't believe I just built this. And maybe it's just a little, I don't know, maybe they just put a motor inside a little doll that kind of, you know, shakes a little bit every once in a while. But for them, it's like, wow, this is exciting. Look at this.
What's your favorite project that you've worked on, Massimo?
That's difficult to say. there's a lot of projects that have been done with Arduino.
Pick one that you've done that you've enjoyed.
Oh, okay. Let me see.
It doesn't really have to be your favorite. I hate it when people do that to me too. They, you know, they say, "What's the stupidest question anybody asked you?" That's the stupidest question anybody asked me.
Okay, so for me, it's a project that it's been going on at the moment. I'm working with these people at the University of Arizona Science Center, and we're basically using Arduino to build a kit to build interactive exhibitions for a museum. And for me, that's the most exciting thing that's been done recently, because we're basically trying to move the Arduino mentality into the museum and exhibition space, which still is run by companies that would make a museum, they give you the keys, and then that's it, you can't touch it. While we want to make the museum, that's a platform that you can build upon, you can change. And then we're basically transferring the Arduino mentality into that. So we're building a number of prototypes of interactive tables and, you know, interactive walls. And we've done a number of... the thing that you're showing now on the screen is one of our scenarios.
This is using an iPhone in a museum.
Yeah, it's using an iPhone as a guide for a museum. But the idea is that when you wave your ticket at the different objects that you see in the museum, it pushes content to your phone, and you can actually take control of the different objects that are in the museum. So, you know, in that case, for example, you got these lamps, and you can turn on and off the lamps from your iPhone. And this whole thing is built with bits of open source software and hardware.
Is there Arduino involved as well in this?
Yes. For example, the RFID readers that you see hidden away in the boxes are actually all Arduino boards. And then there is a piece of hardware that controls LED lamps, and that's also an Arduino board customized to be an LED driver. And so there's all sorts of Arduino that have been customized. We made Arduinos with wireless interfaces so that you can put sensors in the room without running cables. The RFID reader that's shown at the moment on the video is actually running on an Arduino with an Ethernet interface. So this is basically speaking directly to the Ethernet. Actually, the software that runs this whole exhibition is running on a server somewhere in the States. I don't even know where it is.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
The whole exhibition is running in Milan, but the server is in the U.S. somewhere.
That's truly incredible. Wow. That's just amazing.
And the Arduino is pushing the data up there. So for me, this Arduino with the Ethernet interface is the next thing that I'm excited about. Yeah. The fact that you can now download data from the internet or make little web servers that you can embed into objects. Obviously, you find a lot of hardware on the internet that can, you know, you can buy that does this. But I believe that with this Arduino, we made it simpler for beginners to make Ethernet, internet-enabled devices.
So in this sense, as you walk through the museum, because of the RFID tag that you've attached to your phone, it kind of knows who you are, and it can transfer stuff to your phone that allows you to control, or you could learn about an exhibit, you could listen to audio associated with an exhibit,
yes.
That kind of thing.
Wow.
Exactly.
This is incredible.
In the scenario that I'm showing now, this is designed for a city of London, for example, where everybody has an RFID as a transportation ticket.
Ah.
So we're showing that you can use your subway ticket as your museum ticket.
You just need some sort of identification, some sort of a unique RFID, and they can use that.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Yeah, in this case, for example, even in Milan, we use these RFIDs as the public transportation ticket. But in London, it's particularly interesting because everybody has one.
Right.
Every Londoner has one of those things.
Right.
So it's like a form of identification that doesn't have your name written on it. So you can be identified, but your real identity is not available to our installation.
Perfect.
So it's quite nice. It's
perfect, yeah.
It's a balance, you know.
Yeah. I like the small scale, the approachable human scale of it, and yet the ambition of it is great. You're not saying just because it's small, we can't do something interesting. You know, it's very ambitious in a lot of ways.
Yeah, in a way, it's like this idea of making use of appropriate technology. In a way,
right.
A lot of times people use this massive computing power to do very simple tasks because simple objects were difficult to program.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to make the object slightly simpler to program so that it becomes possible to say, you know what, why do you need a PC in here? You can just put this $20 board and it will do most of the work that you need.
I can see this example being really perfect for science museums that always have to build little gadgets to run everything that's in the displays and stuff. And it has to be not just little trivial stuff. It's usually they're wiring up all this custom hardware or dedicating entire PCs to run some of the exhibits. This looks like it'd be perfect for that sort of approachable museum pieces.
So the Arduino, one of the things of using microcontrollers and also Arduino is that they are much more reliable than a PC. They do one thing, mm-hmm. but there's no operating system, there's no hardware, nothing, and there's no hard drive. So you just run it, and that's it. So it actually makes exhibition more robust because you keep the use of the computer to the minimum.
There's no blue screen of Duino?
No. No, we don't. Once it runs, it runs.
Now, there is no kind of prototypical Arduino setup, because I went to the Make site, for instance, which is one of many places that sell Arduino hardware, and they sell all kinds of kits. So you get, it was kind of like in the basic stamp days. You get the stamp, but then you'd get all the other stuff to support it. It sounds like, especially with USB as an interface, the sky's the limit, you know. So you buy an Arduino, but you buy it usually, I would guess, either in a kit or you have the sophistication to put something together of your own.
Yes, normally a beginner would buy the basic kit, which it's essentially one Arduino, a breadboard, a few wires, a USB cable, and a little bag of basic sensors. They get you started.
Right.
So you got a light sensor, a temperature sensor, a few transistors so you can drive a motor. And then I made this little book that's published by O'Reilly. It's called Getting Started with Arduino. It's actually super simple. It's only like 120 pages. And also I got this artist to make handmade drawings of all the parts. Oh. So essentially to make it look not finished, not so polished, so that you feel this is not something super scientific, it is something that I can actually learn. So the little booklet with the kit actually, I would say, makes a very nice start. I would say that if you know a little bit about programming, in the space of a day or two, you're up and running. And my book is more designed for somebody that doesn't really know anything. So I'm even trying to explain what programming is in that book, so that it's really for kind of super, super beginners.
That sounds like the one I want to get to do a project, say, with my son, is that kind of basic setup.
It would be that kind of stuff. Also consider that it's written by an Italian that... whose English is not the first language. So my English is a bit like, I'm writing like a 14-year-old, English boy. So
perfect. I have a 14-year-old English boy. It's perfect.
Yep. There you go. I was assisted by very good people like, Brian Jepson was my editor on this book. And he's also, if you look at the Make magazine, there's a lot of stuff that he's been involved with. So he was very good in like helping me turn that kind of spaghetti English into some proper English with the help of a language editor. But yeah, the idea is that my phrases are very simple because that's the English I know, and so it should make it easier for somebody who's like a teenager or an adult that doesn't know any programming.
Of course, the Maker Faire is coming up, and I'm sure half of the Maker Faire will be Arduino projects. I mean, they love playing with the Arduino.
Yeah, it's quite popular there.
Yeah.
I was thinking one of the things that I read in one of the articles, I think it was the article in Wired, was that your business model initially of having open source hardware and not protected by patents and things like that allowed for, I think it was some groups in from the Far East to create knockoffs of these things. But people found out that they weren't soldered very well. And so they went back and started buying your box instead.
Well, actually... yeah, it's an interesting model. I mean, there's a lot of people that make clones of the Arduino with other names, and that's fine because that's based on the open source hardware philosophy. You know, the only thing that we try to protect is the name.
Yeah.
You know, we have exactly the same policy as Ubuntu Linux. We actually took it straight and changed Arduino, Ubuntu with Arduino. We actually credit them at the end, saying this is where we took it from. But the idea is that when people buy something that says Arduino on it, they need to have a guarantee that, it will work. And it will be designed following certain guidelines of kind of simplicity of use. Based on that, then anybody can build an Arduino-based hardware. Obviously, there's a number of Chinese companies that we saw that sell stuff on the Chinese eBay, Taobao, that actually they were like clones that said Arduino on it, but they are like badly painted on a different color. But actually, what we heard from our distributor in China is that actually people prefer to buy the real Arduino. Also because it says made in Italy, which is something that's, for me, it's like...
it's like a Moleskine. You got to have the... So I'm looking here, and the kit that you recommend is about $69 US. Is that right? Or is it... It's actually less, I think.
It's probably the one from Make magazine.
Yeah, it's at makershed.com, which is their Their little
store.
Yeah,
it contains, I think it contains two books and the Arduino.
It's called Getting Started with the Arduino Kit. It has your book in it, as well as it says the genuine Arduino, resistors, buttons, and other goodies, and it's $69.95. So that sounds like the place to start. Tell us what are the components on the Arduino. What is the processor on an Arduino?
So the processor on the Arduino is this processor called AVR. It's made by an American company called Atmel. And it's actually a small RISC processor. So it's got a very simple instruction set, very beautifully designed. It was designed in Norway. And that's basically it. It's got 16 kilobytes of flash memory for your programs. Actually, the very latest version of Arduino that came out last week actually is now upgraded to 32 kilobytes of flash.
Ooh.
And then it's got, the latest version's got 2 kilobytes of RAM and about 512 bytes of EEPROM, which is, you know, you can use to store settings and that kind of stuff. It's got 8 analog inputs, which is actually 6 analog inputs, the USB version. 6 analog inputs, which is quite good. And it's got all sorts of timers, PWM outputs that you can use to dim LEDs, change the speed of motors. It's got about 14 digital input outputs and 6 analog inputs. So that's most of, and then it's got a little chip that basically does the translation between serial and USB so that you can plug it into a Mac, for example, and it shows up as a serial port. The nice thing is that, for example, the driver for that chip is already provided with Linux, for example. So if you plug the Arduino board into a Linux box, you don't even need to install drivers. It's already ready.
Wow.
It's ready to go, yeah. So that's something that I like. Also, on Windows Vista, if you plug it in, it will automatically download the driver. Then you're still on Vista, and I'm sorry for you, but at least the driver downloads very quickly. So yes, I mean, it's designed to be as simple as possible. You know,
it's powered by the USB
the connection.
Oh, interesting.
So if you're doing something,
sorry, I'm interrupting.
It's hard to tell sometimes. So it's powered by that, but that's also, it's also can be powered by what, 6 volts? So it'll be like 4D cells or something?
Yes, you can power it with batteries as long as you provide at least 6-point-something volts. That works, really. So people have been running it with rechargeable batteries, regular batteries, 9-volt batteries. Some people run it with solar panels. We got a Bluetooth version that's got a quite efficient power supply on it, which is a bit more complicated than the basic Arduino. They can actually run even on one of those button batteries that you put in watches.
Wow.
So if you... Yeah, as long as you provide about 2 volts, it's able to run the board. Obviously, the battery will die very quickly, but depending on how good you are as a programmer, you can actually switch off different parts of the processor. You can slow it down. You can put it to sleep, and then you can make it run for for days, really, if you're good.
Wow. I imagine. I mean, I'm looking at some of the kits. Here's a botanicals kit that the Arduino is in a plant, and I imagine that that's probably how they built the plant that twitters. It's whether it's dry or not.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So this is called
botanicals. I would say that the botanicals is quite important as an example for me because they made the first prototype using a regular Arduino. Then they started to, they showed it at the ITP, the NYU kind of show that I was talking about before. And then people got excited about it and they made a more kind of modular version that snaps on top of an Arduino. And then when they started to get requests for people, they said, hey, you know, I want to buy one. Then they took the design of the Arduino and they kind of designed their own PCB shaped like a leaf.
I love that.
And they actually made a kit. And this is exactly what I want people to do. I want to use the Arduino to prototype. And then when you figure out that you got a product, then take the design. We provide the CAD files for the, you know, the if you, there is this CAD software called Eagle that you can download for free off the internet, and it runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux. And if you use it up to a certain size, it is free for you to use. So that's what we use to design Arduino. So essentially, you download the file, and you can shape it as you want. You can add things to it, and you make your own PCB. And then you make your own product. So that's one of the things that I really like about Arduino, this process, that you start as a prototype, and then you make your own thing.
I saw that one of the designs was a wearable design. You could sew it into clothing.
That's another example. That's a very, very nice project by this researcher called Leah Buckley, who now is a professor at the MIT Media Lab. And I think this Arduino LilyPad was her own doctorate thesis. So essentially, it is an Arduino shaped like a daisy. And you know, the petals of the daisy are actually the input-output pins. So the way you do, you don't solder it; you sew it using this conductive thread. And then you got a little kit of, you know, the little the daisy. It's the processor. Then you got a button, a vibrating sensor, and you got an RGB LED, the battery, power supply. You know, everything. Everything in there. So that was another very good example, because she designed the first prototypes, then she approached us and said, you know, I made this product, I want to manufacture it, but I really want the Arduino stamp of approval on it. And we said, yes, please do. So she uses the Arduino brand, but these are manufactured in the US by a company called SparkFun in Colorado.
It's so,
I would say that,
so cool.
Yes. Yeah, it is. I'm very impressed by what happened. It was never meant. When we started off, we never thought it was going to be like this. You know, it started off because I met this professor called David Quartiers that I mentioned before when I was teaching in Italy. And we found that we had the same ideas about what we wanted in a microcontroller. I had just done a project with a student for his thesis where we learned a lot of things, where, you know, he developed the basic language for the Arduino. So we got together a team. I got one of the students called David Mellis to code, basically rewrite the code from scratch so that it would be completely open source. Then I got this friend of mine called Gianluca from Italy, who has an electronics company. And I said, Gianluca, manufacture 200 of these boards. We'll find somebody to sell them to. And then we found Tom Igo from the NYU, who is very influential professor and, you know, has been teaching this forever. And we got him involved in the team, and the five of us. When we started off, we just wanted to make something that would be better for our students. We didn't have the idea that we were going to become so well known. But I guess that when you design something with specific users in mind, the product that comes out has a personality, and then people then find a lot of use for it. If we were to sit down and make a focus group to figure out what's the perfect microcontroller platform, we would have made something that nobody wants to use.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Having it come out of what something people were actually using. You know, the lily pad is fascinating to me because my daughter always wanted to make smart clothing. And I didn't know where to start. And here's a perfect example of something that she could do. In fact, Leah has pictures of middle school kids designing smart textiles using the LilyPad Arduino. It's really neat.
Yes, it's been, that thing has been very popular. There's people in London that use it to make smart textiles, to smart clothing. I think in that area of like wearable computing, we're still at the beginning. Still, we haven't really figured out where it would be like, what would be like a very good application for it. But obviously, having a lot of students with using this kind of tools produces a lot of concepts, and then, you know, at some point you get to hit the right spot.
Yeah, yeah. And critical mass. I mean, enough people using this that all of a sudden, you know, the world is transformed because of this little Arduino. It's very cool. Massimo, congratulations on your success. And
thank you very much.
What a wonderful contribution you've made.
Indeed.
To art, to science, to education.
To tinkering.
To tinkering, absolutely.
Yes, that's my...
In the true spirit of open source, too. I mean...
Indeed.
You know, you don't have to hack something that people don't want you to hack. There's people out there saying, hack this. Mess with it. Make it work. Do something new.
Incredible.
Massimo, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you very much. I just want to mention that, again, the team is made of 5 people, the people I mentioned before. So it's not only me, it's 5 people. And the 5 of us make this. You know, alone, we wouldn't be making this.
Yeah, credit to David Quartieles and Gianluca Martino, Tom Igo, and David Mellis as well, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, get them all in there. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Massimo.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I can't wait. I'm starting now. I'm going to do this. This is so cool.
I bet you'll already have downloaded the software as we're talking.
Well, I've ordered the kit. Yeah.
You ordered the kit while we were talking? That's great.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Always.
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 Yeah. Because...
I like the comparison of the price of a pizza to the price of an Arduino. I thought that was really thing.
That's inspired, isn't it?
So that changes the whole phrase. You'll give someone a pizza, he eats for a day, give someone an Arduino, and you'll never see him on weekends.
Yeah, that's right. For the rest of your life, he's going to be Arduino-ing. Arduino-ing. Oh, that's just so cool. That's just so
neat. This makes me want to tinker again. This, again, one of these great things, you know, one of these shows where I just want to go out and start playing with this all day again in the time between midnight and 2 a.m. or something, I guess. It'll be the only time I could do it, but there it is.
Yeah.
Just so many great projects, too. I mean, it's I was seeing all sorts of things. I was running down the list of stuff. You know, like, you know, Steve Gibson could use this for his, whenever he makes money, that little sound. He could save up sound. He could have something turn on and off around the room or something.
Well,
that'd be kind of cool.
That's interesting that you should say that, because one of our projects, you know, he inspired me. Because, you know, as people who listen to Security Now know, that every time a credit card payment for SpinRite goes through, Fred Flintstone goes, yabba-dabba-doo, in the background. And I thought, and what has happened is that more people order SpinRite during the show because they right. want to make that go. So I'm talking with Colleen, and I've talked with our website guy, Gordon Hayden. He said, no problem. I can have it ping you, TCP ping. To any device you want every time a PayPal contribution goes through. In fact, we can send different messages. And I was trying to think, well, how can I make this manifest something in the studio? Arduino.
And you've got all that space right behind you on the video. So that'd be really cool to have something
Arduino.
Going on there.
Arduino. We're going to have something Indeed. Explode and go. We're going to have fire pots go off. And I don't know. It's gonna be like a White Snake concert in here. Oh, the humanity.
I'm going to need a hazmat suit to come into the Twit Cottage now.
You know what? I really thought it'd be fun to do is do the Groucho Marx thing and have a duck come down from the ceiling. But
that would be cool. Yeah. That'd be very, very cool.
And if you give $1,000, I get slimed.
Ooh, oh, wow. Ooh,
wouldn't that be fun?
That would be really, really, really cool, indeed.
I have a feeling we would make a lot of money that way.
I think maybe more than you know.
suddenly I'm rich. All I have to do is get slimed all day every day.
I don't know. I can imagine quite a lot.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Oh boy. Anyway, well, that is a really neat project. I'm sorry we didn't get Andy on to talk about his project. He for Macworld Expo, he did an Arduino project. I don't know exactly what he did, but it's a really cool idea. Anyway,
Well, shall we talk about some upcoming guests?
Yes. What do we have coming up for Floss Weekly?
Very soon, we have the Ebox guy, Isaac Clarencia, who Ebox is 500,000 lines of Perl code that help deploy and manage and maintain systems. Like you get a rack of systems, they have to be allocated to various users. So this is great for like centralized compute power for Rexco computers. So that should be kind of interesting, and I really want to ask him how he maintains that much Perl code. So without going insane,
no kidding.
And then coming up right after that, we have Wubby, the Windows Ubuntu installer, so you can run Windows. You can run Windows and you can run Ubuntu underneath it. So that's really cool without reinstalling it with separate partition and stuff. So that should be pretty cool. And Jono Bacon, the Bacon himself, will be on the air there with he's the Ubuntu community manager. We're going to talk a lot about how open source communities can arrange themselves to be one of those meta shows where it's not really so much about the project itself, but about projects in general and open source in general, which I really am looking forward to. That should be a great conversation. He was a great hit at Scale a few weeks ago, so I'm glad that he's going to be on our show. Just added the Core Boot guys, the guys that write the replacement for BIOS. It's the replacement for BIOS in open source.
EFI?
No, Core Boot. It's a separate project, so it's an open source version of that.
Okay.
So,
oh, cool.
It's pretty, pretty cool. So he's coming up. And Cinelera. We talked about it a couple shows ago, the open source video editing suite. So we've got the guys from Cinelera coming on the show talking about that.
Very good. It all sounds excellent. Sounds superb. Yes,
and I am probably, as you're listening to this, but a couple weeks from now, I will be in, of all places, Omaha, Nebraska, speaking.
Another cruise?
No, this is not a cruise. Yeah, a cruise in Nebraska, sure.
It's a corn cruise.
Where do they get the cruise ships?
Cruising the cornfields.
I know. But I'll be, it's for a program called InfoTech, which is a sort of an information software. They approached me when I was doing that whole series of Seaside talks. So they want me to talk about small talk. And I'll also be around there talking to other people and stuff. So if you happen to be in the Omaha, Nebraska area coming up, I think it's the week of April 13th, I will be there. You can make plans to hang out with me. So
sounds really good.
All very good stuff, yeah.
Some good suggestion from the chat room is maybe that I attach the Arduino to a Nerf gun. And you could let's see, we'd have to have some way for you to aim it. And then you make your contribution. And,
wow.
And it's a dollar a throw. It'd be like a carnival.
You'd be ducking all day.
Yeah,
I'd,
I'd
pay a dollar for that.
Anything to make money. We wouldn't anything to make money. Hey, we want to thank, speaking of making money, we really want to thank Google for joining us on Floss Weekly and helping to support it. That's really good. Google does so much for open source software. Our friend Chris DeBona is the open source software manager over there. And the Google Summer of Code, as we mentioned, is a really great event for programmers, budding programmers, for open source in general. And we thank them so much for supporting Floss Weekly. We welcome to the show. Randall, we have come to the end of another exciting edition of Floss Weekly. I've got to run to the mailbox and get my Arduino out.
There we go.
I'm excited. And we'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.